You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Edition of All Marine Radio. You're on your home for it. The one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Hump day. Well, you know, not really hump day, man. For a lot of people, Labor Day weekend. For everybody, Labor Day weekend coming up. Well, not everybody. There's people that listen outside the United States. What's up if you're in Afghanistan or Iraq? What's up? You're probably not observing Labor Day. Although you will work. Good luck over there. So, but everybody in the United States, Labor Day coming up. So you're beyond hump day. Because even if you're taking Monday off, you know you're not doing shit on Friday. Come on, nobody does. It's called easing into the three-day weekend, man. So, but it is traditionally hump day, so good morning from Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Mac, there's no R in that word. I know. It's the reason it's pronounced McNamara, not McNamara, because that's the way my family pronounces it. And if that's the way his family pronounces it, it's his house. Welcome to his house. It's his name. The family name is Lejeune. All right, anyway. What's going on? Did post-matic winning yesterday. And then went to dinner with one of the guys I met when I was here in January. A Lance Corporal by the name of Matthew Kiker. And I'll tell you his story, and then at some point he'll come on and talk about it. But I walked in January to the Staff NCO Academy, and aboard Camp Lejeune, there's a series of camps, right? Camp Geiger, Camp Johnson, Courthouse Bay, right? So, just like in all Marine Corps bases, there's different camps because they tend to be huge and we tend to spread out a little bit. So anyway, we're at the Staff NCO Academy over at Camp Johnson, which is where the first Black Marines were trained, where supply school is. I went to supply school there, yeah. Montford Point, right? So you've heard the term. If you're familiar with Marine Corps history, Montford Point, you'll find that there. So anyway, I walk in, and it wasn't, I want to say, oh, maybe I should mute my phone, eh? Stand by. All right, now that that's done, I walk in, and the audiovisual guy who supports the building, he comes over to me, and he says, hey, Mac, you need to talk to this Marine over here. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, you just need to talk to him. Come on. So I follow him, and I walk up, and here's a Marine who's visibly upset, right? His hands are shaking, and, you know, his face is red, his eyes are red. And I said, hey, what's up, Marine? And he looked at me, and he said, sir, I can't sit through classes like this. They make me angry. I can't do it. And I said, and there's a bunch of people standing around. And I said, hey, come with me. So we leave the auditorium that holds about 1,000 Marines. And we're probably about 15 minutes from starting. So, I mean, most of the 1,000 Marines are in there. And so we walk out into a hallway and then around the corner, and there was this coffee kiosk in there, like a little Starbucks. And there's a, you know, it's a, there's couches and tables and chairs and booths. And so, and they make coffee in there and sell it. So we go into the corner and we sit down, and I said, what's going on? And he tells me his story. My father committed suicide. My uncle's in jail for murder. My brother committed suicide, and I can't watch shit like this. And he looked at me and he said, does the pain ever go away? And I said, no, it never does. I said, welcome to the land of misfit toys. And I said, but you need to stay here for this. You know, it's not bullshit, I promise you. With that, General Furness comes in. He found us. So he thinks we're in there, you know, just shooting the shit like we would normally do, because I had been in there a couple days before. And he comes to the door and he says, hey, what's going on? And we turn and he looks and goes, oh, what is going on? Pulls up a chair, sits down. So myself, Kiker, and are sitting there, and I tell him what's going on. And he looks at Kiker and he says, you need to stay here for this. He said, sit in the back by the door. He said, but you need to hear this. All right? And Kiker says, yes, sir. And so we talk for a few more minutes, and then General Furness, he's got to introduce the whole thing, so he speaks first. So he had to go grab his notes and whatnot before we did it. And so he stands up and he says, hey, I've got to get moving. So he stands up and he looks at Lance Corporal Kiker and he says, stand up, Kiker. Kiker stands up and General Furness gives him a hug. He goes, hey, you'll be all right. You're going to get through this. So he walks out and Kiker and I are about 50 feet behind him. So we're walking, and I looked at Kiker, and I said, Kiker, you just got hugged by the Division CG. And he looks at me and goes, I'm not going to lie, sir, that was kind of weird. and I started laughing. I said, I'm going to need your cell phone number because he's going to want it. So Kiker went, and he sat in the back and watched it. General Furness introduced it. I spoke. During a break, I sit next to General Furness, and he looks at me and goes, hey, I need his cell number. I said, here it is. Well, what happened after that is one of the cool things about all of this. There's a consistent theme that runs through much of this, and that is when people are struggling, we pull them closer to us. And it's what happened to Jeremiah Workman. It happens over and over again. And Lance Corporal Kiker is an example of it. General Furness pulls him up to his little entourage that worked for him. Kiker is now getting, he'll be out of the Marine Corps, I want to say in 3 or 4 months. He's got a job lined up with police department when he gets out. And he's got a life. And so, so he and I went to dinner last night. And just had a great time. I had pot roast, fried pickles, hors d'oeuvres, and which I love. This place here in Jacksonville makes them. And they have the best pot roast. It's awesome. It's like your mom makes. Pot roast, gravy, mashed potatoes, and green beans with bacon. I'm telling you, man, I don't even look at the menu when I roll in there. They're like, do you care? You want to look at a menu? I said, don't need to. Fried pickles and pot roast. And they start laughing. They're like, those are two of our specialties. I said, they're good. I'm not going to lie to you. So we sat and had dinner and talked. And, you know, it's just, it is amazing, you know, the pain that people live with. And then I think what's so powerful about post-traumatic winning is what's gone on All Marine Radio since its inception is that it's just this candid conversation about our lives as Marines, the things that you do, and then how you cope with them once you come home. And I think that how you cope with it question obviously has been a huge part of All Marine Radio. It's the horizontal theme that I wanted to make sure that was in it. And I love hearing from Marines that, yeah, I walked in that thing and I was so pissed I had to go. Man, it changed my life. So yesterday, Jeremy Furness said, hey, earlier in the day before Kiker and I had dinner, late in the afternoon, he said, hey, I'm meeting with my sergeant council. Do you want to come to it? I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I go in there. Man, being around motivated good Marines is like, I don't know, it's a magical tonic for the human spirit. You know, guys are just, you know, they're all in great shape and they're just good looking young guys and right, and they're fired up. They've been chosen to represent their unit on this council the CG has of sergeants, and they come and they bring their issues and they talk about them. So anyway, afterwards, I was talking to a couple of the sergeants. You know, Jim Furness had to leave, but I didn't, so I stayed. And so I'm talking to a couple of sergeants, and one of them looks at me about one of the issues that came up during the discussion. And so he looks at me and he says, you know, sir, I went to your class in January, and I was so pissed. You know, 3 hours. I remember walking in going, you know, why are we doing this? And he said, when I was walking out, two of my best friends and I walking out, we've all been in the Marine Corps between 8 and 10 years. And my best friend looked at me and said, that's the best class I've ever been to in my life. Which is good, right? Which is very, you know, very heartwarming to hear that. And then he looked at me and he said, my dad committed suicide last month. And the knowledge that I got from your class, I went back in and I'm using that to help my family. So I talk about being the coolest guy in the room. And there's a reason for that. And it happens to me over and over, happens to me every day now. And I cannot emphasize, if you're listening enough, to just stay very sensitive to what you hear and do not be afraid to look at somebody and say, hey, man, you know, can I talk to you? And that's how, for me, that's how it starts every time. Or, I told you the other day it started for me in Macy's. How are you doing? Me? I'm awesome. You are? Yep. Why? Well, I spent the day with a group of Marines talking about how to turn trauma into something good. And she stopped what she was doing. My point is, that's all it takes, right? A teaser, like, I'm having an awesome day. Because you've had an impact on somebody's life. You've helped them, and now they, in turn, are helping others. And I don't know that there's any, there's a better feeling than that on the planet. So, it was just a cool experience yesterday. And then today, headed over to New River to do post-traumatic winning for the first time for the 2nd Marine Air Wing. So, I'm fired up about that. A friend of General Furness's and mine, we were captains. He was a major at the basic school at the time. His name is Boomer Milstead. He's been on the program. He's a Cobra pilot. Rose to the rank of Lieutenant General and got out after he was head of Manpower and Reserve Affairs. And so I've been bugging him to come down. And Boomer had back surgery a little while ago and been laid up a little bit. So he's going to be there. And so it's going to be cool. And so I'll drag Boomer's actually part of, he's part of the story. He's the one who meets Jeremiah Workman at the National Museum of the Marine Corps when Jeremiah got assigned to Wounded Warrior Regiment in Quantico, and somebody said, let's have him work up at the museum, right? And so Jeremiah's up there with his, Bravos or Charlies on. So that, for those of you who aren't familiar, so it would be your dress green pants, right? Your shiny shoes, a gray shirt that we wear, and your ribbons right on. And so that's where he went to work. General Milstead, Boomer, he goes down there to see the museum. Takes his two girls, and as he's going through, he sees this Marine in uniform, and he sees the Navy Cross. And he looks and goes, you're Sergeant Workman. And he says, yes, sir. He says, what are you doing here? He said, I work here, sir. What do you do? Well, right now I'm guarding this replica of a military working dog because when people pet it, the hair falls out. He's like, are you shitting me? He's like, not really, sir. And then General Milstead said, do you like it here? He said, sir, I hate it here. It's killing me. So on Monday, Boomer goes up. He's talking to Commandant, and Sergeant Major Kent's there. Sergeant Major Kent makes Jeremiah his driver. So this theme of pulling somebody closer to you, Jeremiah now calls, if you listen to the interview, he, quote, that man's like a second father to me. So what happens? What worked? What works is pulling somebody close inside of our culture, right? Talking to them, listening to them, letting them know that they're not alone, and helping them. And so General Milstead is a big part of that. He's also a part of the presentation in, and I'm going to wire brush his ass for this, but, so, the day of the helicopter crash that I talk about, in 1993, after everything is done, we're sitting on the crash site, because Marines from MAG 39 have to come out, right, the surveyors, and they survey everything, right? If you've never seen the engineering work that goes on in a crash, you know, every piece of debris, you know, gets mapped as they attempt to find out exactly what happened, right? And so my company is in a perimeter around the crash site. And I don't know what I was doing, but I got told that I think they got there maybe after dark. I'm not sure. I got told that, hey, sir, the guys from the wing are here. They're down in the wadi. So I knew it was my responsibility as a commanding officer of Alpha Company to go down there, introduce myself, let them know if they needed anything, you know, that we had whatever they needed, MREs, water, fuel, whatever. So they'd driven a passenger van out in the desert. And it's not like we were on a road either. You know, we were on one of those bumpy trails, you know, that went through a wadi, which is a dried-out riverbed. So, and we didn't have any problems because we had eight-wheel drive LAVs, but an eight-passenger van, that's not the easiest ride in the world. So I walked down into the wadi because I don't know where I was. I was up, like, on a little plateau because we were kind of in an admin thing that night because of the crash. So I walked down into the wadi, and I could see, or somebody had told me, that they'd built a bonfire. Now, even when Marines are admin, we tend not to build bonfires. Not something we do. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So I'm walking up, and it's a big fire. And now I can see the cots that they're sitting on, and they're laughing and joking. And it pissed me off, right? So here we are out working, and these guys are in the middle of it, you know, having a party. It wasn't a party per se, but I want to say that there was beer there. So I walk up and I see this, and I said, "Excuse me," I said, "I'm Captain McNamara, the CEO of Alpha Company. Who's in charge of this?" And I hear out of the dark, "I am Mac. What's it to you?" And I look, and it's Boomer. It's Boomer. And I look, and I said, "What in God's name are you doing?" And he said, "I'm the investigating officer." And he said, "We're just hanging out." He said, "We'll tone it down." I said, "I'd appreciate it. The rest of my Marines are around here watching this shit. And I know you all are swinging with the wing and all that shit, but," he goes, I got it, we're hanging out in Gruntland, right? And all you uptight grunts, all right, you don't do this. But it was great to see him. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, "Hey, first of all, thank your Marines, for all of us, for what they did today." He said, "You know, we heard that you guys were, you know, you guys were all over it." Now, this is probably, I don't know, a few hours after we learned that the two Marines that we tried to save, the co-pilot and the and Sergeant Brazzarini, had died at Riverside Hospital. You know, and I mean, that was crushing. And, you know, I just remember looking at him saying, you know, "We did our best." And he said, "We know, we heard." And so, I mean, if you can imagine, you know, days like that when you see your friends, how good that feels. And then, you know, he and I just sat down and, you know, we caught up a little bit what he was doing. I want to say he was a squadron XO, so it would be like the regimental XO. I think, I'm not sure. Or it might have been the opso. But, so it was great. So he'll be there today. So, but again, it's funny, right, how life intersects with these kind of things. And so that he'll be there today, that his name comes up a couple of different times as I tell the story on a regular basis. And so I'm gonna wire brush his ass with it. The other thing that I'm gonna tell when I talk, you know, welcome him. First of all, Boomer's got a gigantic head, right? He's got like a Tatanka. He's got like a buffalo head. Yeah, I think his hat size is like 9. Okay, and it's only 9 because we don't make a 10. So, yeah, he's got a huge head. It looks like something rented for the Mardi Gras or some shit like that. So, anyway, I'll point that out. But the other thing that, that I did with him, so I meet him at the basic school, and he had been in an Anglico unit, Air Naval Gunfire Liaison Company. So when we serve, like, with the Brits or the Vietnamese, we'll take these companies, and they have forward air controllers, and they have artillery liaison guys, artillery FOs, and we attach them to the people that are working with us so we can fully integrate them into what we do. And Marine Corps has been doing it forever. So Boomer was a part of that. So he thinks he's a grunt. Yeah, he thinks he's a grunt. He thinks he can speak grunt, but he can't. Like, he's a wannabe. He knows it. But he won't accept it. So he was a company commander at the basic school, so he's got a company of 240 lieutenants, Echo Company. But he doesn't call it Echo Company. He calls it Elvis Company. Yeah, which is pretty funny, honestly. So we're getting ready to go do patrolling. So as a company commander, he's going to come out and watch training, right? But he's got to pick, like, one patrol to go with. So he picks mine, because he knows he's going to have fun with me. So we're navigating, and he's like, Mac, we're right here. I'm like, no, we're not. We're here. Quantico is the hardest place to navigate in the world, one of them. If you can navigate in Quantico, you can navigate any place on the planet. Whoever picked that thing did good, because it's got all these fingers and streams, and it's really confusing if you don't pay attention and know your shit, so you're forced to. So anyway, we would go, and we'd have a good time. So one of the problems, like the first live fire problem that lieutenants do, is a range called range fire. It is basic fire and maneuver. So what happens is you get a squad, and they're generally online, and they start back in this tree line. They come out of the tree line. They go over a little hill, and they're deployed horizontally, walking straight ahead. And then there's simulators. Right, there's demolition beds with quarter sticks of TNT that you can blow. So there's a tower that controls all this. And there's pop-up targets on the range. So when the boom, boom, boom goes, the lieutenants, that's incoming, right? So the lieutenants, boom, they hit the deck, right? That's what you do when things explode. You get on the ground. But then you get up and you move, because you got to move through incoming. So anyway, that's how it starts. Then the pop-up targets pop up. And so their job is, as some Marines are running, right, as one fire team's moving, the other two fire teams are keeping every one of those targets knocked down so that the bad guys don't pop up and shoot us, right? This is called fire and movement. It's the most basic infantry skill, one of the most basic team infantry skills. You know, one element's moving, the other element is suppressing. So they do this. And so everybody spends about a half a day out there doing it, maybe three or four times, depending on how much ammunition we have and how fast things are going. So by your third time through, you've got a good conceptual idea, and you've done it enough where, you know, you see the problems with it and how hard it is to control when guys are shooting, you know, and all the different things. So that's what we teach there. And so I'm in charge of it. So towards the end of the afternoon session, so there's about 130 lieutenants in the morning and 130 lieutenants in the afternoon, something like that. So in the afternoon session, as it's getting ready to end, I find Boomer and I say, hey, I've got something for you. And he said, what? I said, when this is done, get the lieutenants together and talk to them about how important this training is. And he looks at me and goes, okay. And then I'm going to leave one target up. And then I want you to take one of their rifles and I want you to stand, like, with your back to the range and get somebody's shaving mirror and have them hold it up in front of your face. And then act like you're aiming on the target. And then pull the trigger. Okay, now, the only thing you can't do is you cannot fire the round into the deck. Okay? So fire the round downrange. and I'll knock the target out. And he goes, that's awesome. He goes, all right. So we end. He gets everybody together. And he gives this, like, awesome fire and brimstone speech about why this is so important. No matter what you do in the Marine Corps, you need to understand this, because this is who we are. This is what we do. We're Marines. And he said, now, you know, one of the most important things you learned, though, was the importance of combat marksmanship out here. He said, when Marines are moving, everybody else's job is to keep everybody else's head down so that none of us get killed. He said, and it's not like shooting on the rifle range. It's different. And I think you all learned that today. And I want to demonstrate for you the importance of marksmanship. He's standing there, and he says, who's got a shaving mirror? One of the lieutenants is like, I do, sir. Where is it? It's in my pack. Go get it. So the lieutenant runs and gets it, comes back, and he said, give me your rifle. Grabs the rifle. Lieutenant's standing there with the mirror. He goes, all right, hold that mirror. He puts the rifle over his shoulder, and then he holds up one round. He goes, you see this? Did you see this? The concept of one. One God, one core, one country, one wife, one shot, one kill. Right? It was awesome. He puts the round in the rifle. He lets the bolt go home. He lines the shot up and pulls the trigger with his thumb. And he didn't shoot it in the deck, right? The target goes down, and the lieutenants go crazy. They go crazy. And what does he do? He moonwalks with the rifle in the grass. He moonwalked in the rifle with the grass, in the grass. It was hilarious. I'm up in the tower. The Marines in the tower are laughing their ass off. They're like, sir, this is awesome. And then they start yelling, like, they knocked it down, they knocked it down. And he's like, are you insulting my integrity? Are you kidding me? And, but it was awesome. So he's going to be there today. And as I said, I mean, he came when General Furness and I were, General Furness was a colonel, his regimental commander at RCT-1. We're in Afghanistan, and General Milstead comes with the commandant, General Amos. And when we were at the basic school, General Amos was a lieutenant colonel. He was in charge of the command and leadership group. General Milstead worked for General Amos there. And so now General Amos was a commandant. General Milstead was manpower and reserve affairs, so he went with them on this trip. So they come to Helmand, and, you know, we're fighting every day. And so Boomer comes into COC. He's like, where's Mac? And they're like, sir, he's sleeping. And so he said, I'll see him in the morning. So I come in and like, hey, sir, some General Milstead's looking for you. And I'm like, holy shit. So I go into General Furness's office, and here the commandant is, and Boomer's in there. And we had a great time. We had just used a weapon that the Marine Corps had been working on called the Harvest Hawk. And what it is we take this pod, this ghetto pod, it's this plastic pod, and we put a smaller piece of ordnance on it. And I can't remember how many pounds it is, but it's smaller ordnance, right, with a precision-guided head on the back of it. And this pod holds, I want to say, 36 rounds, and it gets strapped to the back of a C-130. So the C-130 goes up in the air. That thing stays up, can stay up for 8 hours. And it's just loitering. And the beauty of it was it's precision-guided. It's on station forever. And what happens is they shove the munition with a broom handle, I think with a towel around the end of it. Yeah, it's straight up ghetto, right? Out the back of the plane. So they shove it out the back, and then it falls nose down. It arms itself, and now it's a precision guided munition with a small signature, which means there's not a whole lot of collateral damage. Yeah, Marine Corps Ghetto. It was awesome. And so we had been the first people to use it. And, yeah, we had some guys who tried to ambush a Marine patrol and a reinforced rifle squad. And then they did their typical, you know, turn around and run. And we tracked them. And unlike a lot of times, they gathered back together in a group of, I want to say, probably eight or so. And they're in that group standing there talking when the Harvest Hawk checks on station. And we're sitting there watching the feed going, holy shit, this is going to be awesome. They launched that Harvest Hawk. And because the other thing that it does, it flies subsonic. Okay? So what that means is there's no noise. If it flies supersonic, I think what happens is as it gets near the Earth, it, for whatever reason, it slows down. And then the sound catches up to it. And that's that wow that you hear with artillery rounds when they come in. That's what I was told. That might be total bullshit, but that's what I was told. With this piece of ordnance, because it flew subsonic, it made no noise. So now with supersonic round, they would hear the noise, and probably a second or two before, they would have time to dive or move, right? With this piece of ordnance, they don't hear anything. And all of a sudden, it just explodes on them. So Mills said, finds me in the morning, and he says, hey, Mac, have you guys used the Harvest Hawk? And I said, yeah. I said, that thing's awesome. He said, do you have any war porn, which means good video, right? And I said, yeah, we do. He said, all right, I'm going to get the Commandant, and he's going to come in. He said, will you tee it up? And I said, yeah. So, I mean, it's like, you know, these guys you've known for, you know, I met him in 1990. So I've known him for, you know, 20 years. By the time this happened. So just good stuff. Anyway, with all that said, fired up to head over to New River today and do post-traumatic winning again. I was at Courthouse Bay yesterday. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But before we do anything else, the United States Marine Corps band makes today official. Happy Wednesday to everybody from all of us here in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Yesterday I had the privilege of doing post-traumatic winning over in Courthouse Bay here in, which is one of the camps here at Camp Lejeune. And 2nd Recon, 2nd CEB, and 2nd Tracks all showed up. And so to all the Marines that were so gracious yesterday, we didn't have a theater to do it in, so we did it in the gym. Not the most comfortable venue, but they were a great audience. And I just want to thank them for taking time out of their day, and wish all of them Godspeed. So it's dedicated to y'all.
To the soul of God, betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Winning. Why is it always about winning? Yeah, I don't know. It just is. My number two son headed to Europe today with his girl, his fiance, the lovely Sarah. So good luck, Patrick. Don't screw it up. Time to check the weather in Marineland. Currently in Quantico, clouds in 75. It's 9 o'clock here on the East Coast as I record this, because when I actually play it, I'll be doing post-traumatic wind. So, just so you know what the temperatures are, because I know you're interested in the weather. So in the morning here on the East Coast, cloudy in 75 in Quantico, sunny in 77 here at Camp Lejeune. Right on the New River, dark cloudy in 79 and 29 Palm. At Pendleton, it's cloudy in 68. Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is dark cloudy in 79. In Okinawa, it is dark clear in 84. In Ramadi, partly cloudy in 112. In Marja, it is sunny and 100, so cooling off in Afghanistan. at the corporate headquarters of All Marine Radio, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California. It is cloudy and 70. As the sun's just coming up. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The one and all name, All Warrior. That's right. You heard it. The All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage. Nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk you to a
Wednesday. I got to check in with her. See how that girl's doing. I was at Courthouse Bay yesterday. Now, I got lost and wound up there the other night when I got here. And I'm like, I've never seen this place. Like, what am I doing here? So, yeah, Google Maps has, like, a condemned building that at some point was some kind of BOQ, as the BOQ here. So I thought, yeah, that ain't right. Anyway, so I went back there, and, recon, tracks, engineers were all there. And, post-traumatic wing's not, I mean, I keep trying to make it shorter, but I don't think I should, because it's all, and I asked Gerald Furness, who's seen it 21 times now, and he's like, no, man, I know you're doing your best to keep it short, and things you maybe used to amplify on, you kind of condense a little bit because you put something else in there. He said, but I wouldn't. It's too powerful. You can't. Like, what part would you take out? And I'm like, that's what I wrestle with. And I even sitting here listening to the commercial, right? I talk about veterans, we fake it, right? We fake mental health. If we don't cry during TAPS, if we don't cry when we sing Eternal Father or Amazing Grace, then we're good, right? Wrong. We're not good. You know, that's what we say. And so this makes me think of it. This is a VA crisis line commercial.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good.
So I hear that, and I know that I should play that audio when I talk about faking it. This is how we fake it. We say shit like this. I'm good, but. Well, if you're good, but you don't sleep, if you're good, but you're angry, I'm not sure who I'm describing. Maybe myself, right? Then guess what? You're not good. So how do you get good, right? How do you get good? Or are you okay with that? And that's just part of the way you coexist with it. That, yeah, I do get angry, but I know how to deal with it. Or some nights I don't sleep, but I know how to deal with that too. So, and that's what needs to be after the comma. You know, I do get angry, but I know how to vent that shit. So yeah, it's a challenge because as I do this more and I, you know, for instance, there's now, that quote from General Mattis, right? About how you have to know, if you're a leader, how you have to know your Marines, right? And, right, everybody heard General Mattis, right? Everybody heard of General Mattis. So when you hear him talk about, if you don't love your Marines, then you need to get out. Right? That's some serious shit, man. That is some serious shit that he talks about. All right? And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's this quote right here. It starts with, hell, the only reason I stuck around this low-paying outfit, all right?
If you don't love your Marines, then you really got to get out. The only reason I stuck around that low-paying outfit for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda anytime you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So when you hear that, you know, I hear that audio and it's like, that's got to be in there, right? And so as what I call those little cuts of audio or video, precision guided munitions, and so you know you ask everybody, there's a picture of Joe Mattis there, and the audio plays behind the picture. I talk about him coming on the program and talking about discipline and leadership and how, you know, interwoven they are and how you have to know them. And so, because, you know, Marines have heard forever, you know, you're Marines. Okay, yeah, I got it. Well, General Mattis would look at you and say, no, you don't. No, you don't. You don't got it. So I want you to listen to what I'm saying because you don't got it. And every one of those compared, I was going through and I looked at what I presented in January. And it's so much more vibrant. It's so much better now, 8 years later and it'll continue to evolve. I know there's quotes from the interview I just did with General Zinni that I need to sit down and listen to the interview again and yank quotes out of, you know, there's one or two quotes in there that fit perfectly into what we're talking about. One of the things that, that General Zinni talks about is he didn't think when they were looking for the core value statement, honor, courage, commitment, he thought it should be honor, courage, discipline. He said, I think that's the Marine Corps, honor, courage, discipline. He said, commitment? Of course we're committed. He said, but what we are, honor, courage, discipline. It's kind of interesting, him talking about when, you know, when that core value statement came out, that he advocated for something different. So anyway, as I developed the class, I was talking to Joe Furness about it. Actually, he and his wife and I were talking about it at dinner the other night. And, you know, and I was talking about trying to shorten it. And he said, yeah, but so what do you leave out? He said, it all builds on each other. He said, you know, the credibility of what you say, you know, comes out of not only your operational experiences, Mac, but, you know, the stuff in your personal life. Any one of those would be enough for you to have credibility to talk about it. But when you go from the divorce of your parents to the helicopter crash to what happened to your nephews to your three combat deployments to your sister, Maureen, freezing to death, you know, he said, honestly, he said, I hear it, and I'm like, I shake my head every time I hear it. And he said, so to me, that brings them in, that you are not going to sugarcoat any bullshit. And he said, when you look at them and say, I didn't start out to do this, that I was a consumer, man. I was just looking to try to help. How do I get through it? How can I help other people get through it? I didn't think I'd ever be standing here. He said, that's powerful stuff. And it helps them identify with you. And then you got to do the three goals and the eight commandments. I said, yeah. He said, and then all those little videos that you play when you talk about how this stuff applies to you, the rabbi, right? All the Will Smith video about self-discipline, the Barnado Simpson video, right? All those videos. And then when you talk about leadership, you play the Joe Mattis, you know, audio. He said, what are you going to, how are you going to cut it out? I'm like, I don't know, but I mean, 3 hours is a long time. So anyway, I'm not going to even do any news today. So that's an update here from Camp Lejeune. I hope that you tomorrow that we meet Lance Corporal Kiker. I would like for you to meet him. He's turned his life around. That kid saves people all the time. I mean, so we're sitting at dinner and he's telling me stories. So we're talking about, you know, him getting out, what he's going to do. And I said, so you saving anybody? And he smiles and he says, I am. He said, I do it all the time. He said, because younger people, they talk about killing themselves. You know, they wouldn't talk about it to probably you, Mac, but they, you know, when people struggle, they talk. And then people will say, hey, well, go talk to Kriker. And I want you to meet him. I want you to hear his story from his mouth. And hopefully tomorrow you'll hear from him. Maybe General Milstead, after he watches Post-Traumatic Brain, will get his thoughts. But again, looking forward to first time ever doing it for any MAW in the Marine Corps. So Second Marine MAW stands for, if you don't know, Second Marine Air Wing. So headed over, never been there, headed across the New River today, over to the air station, and gonna meet some of the people over there and do this. So, and then hopefully at some point I'll head back and do other units. But again, I can tell you how cool it is. I mean, again, I shared yesterday that text I got from Master Sergeant in the Air Force. Did I share that yesterday or did I not? I don't think I could have because I think I just got it. I think I just got it yesterday after I got off the air. So listen to this. Let me find it. Hey, sir. And now this is from Master Sergeant that was my escort at the Air Force Academy. Hey, sir, just want to say thank you again for coming out. You've received nothing but rave reviews from our leadership teams and our teammates. It was definitely an eye-opening experience. Also, a captain friend of mine that's stationed out at Cannon Air Force Base, home of a large special operation forces camp, and Reapers asked for your information as well. The word is spreading! Exclamation mark. You know, so I mean, my day is filled with stuff like this. So again, your day could be filled with it too. All you got to do is try, and it starts with, "Hey man, can I talk to you? Got a minute?" And then change somebody's life. So, on that note, time for me to go get ready to yo here on a Wednesday. Mid-morning here on the East Coast. And got to get fired up to go to post-traumatic winning, again. And let me tell you, some things in life are difficult to get motivated for. Others in life are not.
You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California on the All.
So that'll do it on a Wednesday. The, what else? Any other public service announcement? So, no, I'm keep my fingers crossed that more and more people will see the value of the blunt truth. And that's one of the things that the sergeant that I was talking to yesterday told me. He said, sir, you want to know why it's so powerful? I said, why? He said, for me. He said, because it was just the truth, man. It was one after the next, after the next. It was like, how did he say it? It was like you were just punching us with the truth. And any one of those things, we would have said, holy shit. But when you rolled it all together, when we walked out of it, we just looked at each other and went, holy shit, man. That was awesome. So, but you know what? You know, that sergeant whose father committed suicide. You know, first of all, heartbreaking. But to hear him say, and this was the whole intent of this, that he had an idea of what to do, when that darkened his doorstep, was the whole purpose of post-traumatic winning. it was the whole purpose, that when trauma comes their way, that they do know what to do, and they do know that they can get through it. They do know that it's not a dark alley and a dead end. And they do know what to do. I mean, it's awesome when you hear them say that kind of stuff. So, anyway, why I think this is so important. On a Wednesday, Allmarine Radio is over, and I am out. Have a great day.